The following talk was given by Steve Hagen at Dharma Field Meditation and Learning Center in Minneapolis on March 31st, 2013. This talk may not be played or reproduced for profit.
Good morning. People ask the way to Cold Mountain. There's no trail. In summer, ice doesn't melt. The rising sun blurs in the swirling fog. How did I get here? My heart's not the same as yours. If your heart was like mine, you'd be here. All I can say to those I meet, try and make it to Cold Mountain. Hanshan. This is a pretty well-known poem by the character Hanshan. Cold Mountain. A very interesting piece, don't you think? He says, people ask the way to Cold Mountain. There's no trail. But people want to know how to get to Cold Mountain. They meet someone. They think they meet someone. Like Hanshan, Cold Mountain. How can I be like that? Maybe they don't meet someone like Hanshan, but they hear about such people. The awakened, how freely they must live, free of all the different kinds of pains and sorrows and anxieties and fears and worries and ambitions and all the stuff that I'm dealing with. I'd like to make it to Cold Mountain. How can I be like Cold Mountain? How can I get there? So people ask the way to Cold Mountain, says Hanshan. There's no trail. There's no trail. This is why we have a hard time, I guess, if we do, finding our way to Cold Mountain. No trail, because we're trying to find the way. We want to know, how do I get there? I'm not there now. I hear about these kinds of people. I'm not like that. But I'd like to be. I'd like to be that free. So how do I do this? Hanshan says, well, there's no trail. There's no way to get to be this way. And if that starts to sink in a little bit, maybe we get a little discouraged. We've been working hard trying to find our way to Cold Mountain. I don't know, it just seems so hard. I can't figure it out. I can't find the way. And then when we're told, well, there is no way, well, that's pretty discouraging. Especially after you've been working at it for maybe a long time. Maybe you've heard, yeah, there's no way. So we do things. We hear things and we take what we hear and we kind of give it our own spin, our own interpretation. As if when Hanshan says, well, there's no trail. Well, okay, he's speaking symbolically. So, okay, there's no trail. Now, what does that mean? You know, we want to figure that out. And now we're searching for a way to unravel, well, what does he mean by that? That there is no, I mean, he just says there's no trail. There's no way. Seems like too much to say that there's no way. Then it's like it's hopeless or something. And yet, I hear about these people. There are some, there have been some through history, who supposedly, I guess, have found this kind of freedom. I would really like to get that, but I just can't quite figure this out. But there's no trail. What does that mean? So I got to find some other way. But we don't understand. There's no trail. What are you doing? Looking for something. There's no trail. How long? 10, 20, 30 years does it take us to finally hear that? And to digest that and to realize what that is pointing out for us and to notice what we're doing. We're still looking for some way to get there. To Cold Mountain. Maybe we haven't really noticed. He said, Cold Mountain, this guy, Han Shan, that's what Cold Mountain means. He takes his name from this place where he lived, Cold Mountain. Cold Mountain. Does that sound inviting, really? I don't want to get there, but because there's this freedom. But Cold Mountain, have we digested that? Have we considered that for a moment? This place we want to get to, where I'm not now, but I want to get there. I want to become like Han Shan. I want to become like Cold Mountain. We want so much. We try so hard to get there. We don't really appreciate that there's no trail. And we haven't really appreciated that it's called Cold Mountain. Han Shan says that in summer, ice doesn't melt. Does that sound inviting? You can't even have a summer without ice? And the rising sun blurs in the swirling fog. Well, that kind of feels like where I am now. I'm in a fog. I don't understand this. I don't know how to find my way to this place. So it's like we really haven't settled down on this and looked at what it is that we think we want here. If we're interested in waking up, living out of awakeness, becoming one like Han Shan or any of the other great enlightened teachers we've heard of. Cold Mountain. Ice doesn't melt in summer. We're living in a way, perhaps, that's very hot, agitated, full of movement and change and struggle. It's frenzied. A lot of energy there. Energy, not really useful energy, it's just energy to feed our drivenness and our desire to find, well, beyond career and family and entertainment and all of this, just to be at peace, where things have simmered down. But we haven't really considered that because we're still, you know, caught up in all of this. And our ambition, our desire to wake up is part of this same agitation. And how do I find the way? And we're ignoring that Banan Shani is this place called Cold Mountain, he points out. Ice doesn't melt in summer. So we really haven't contemplated this too well. It takes some time, probably years, to really look at what? At that out there, because that's our problem. We keep looking at that out there. And what does he mean by that? And what? And how do I interpret that? And here we are. We're out there. We're not looking here. Han Shan, he says, how did I get here? So how did I get here? You want to be like me? You want to be like this? Cold Mountain? How did I get here? He said, my heart's not the same as yours. There's no trail. We're not talking about getting somewhere. You're thinking of it in terms, you want to know, how did I get here? I'd like to be like that. How can I be like you? How can I find that way? Yeah, there's no trail. I keep forgetting that. How else can I think of this? How do I get there? And so Han Shan just points right at it. How did I get here? My heart's not the same as yours. If your heart was like mine, you'd be here. So this is the place we need to look. It's not out there. It's not out there in something I can do or get or acquire or figure out. It's about just looking right here, right where I'm sitting now, for each of us, just right here. Within your own heart and mind. And where is that? That isn't anywhere in particular. It's just right here. If your heart was like mine, you'd be here. But our hearts, our minds, are always going out to that, something else out there, something that I need, something that I have to get, something that will bolster me or satisfy me or comfort me. Always reaching that way. And then we want this, we hear this freedom, this enlightenment, it's out there, I want that too. And there we are. And we never reflect on what we're doing. And maybe just asking ourselves a simple question, is this the way to carry on? Is this the way Han Shan? Does he carry on like this? Cold Mountain. So if your heart were like mine, you'd be here. Well, we might think, well, then if Han Shan is something different than me, well, my heart will never be like his because that's his heart and I have mine. And so here we are once again. Now we're seeing distance and a way to get over there and to become like him. And but he says, my heart's not like yours. Because he's just here. He is Cold Mountain. And our heart isn't like that. Our heart keeps looking for something that's warm and comforting and will be pleasing and will satisfy all my troubles, you know, and so I can be at ease and at peace and have some understanding and comfort. So Han Shan is just pointing this out. You want to find this place? You know, how did I get here? My heart's not like yours. If your heart was like mine, so look at your heart. If your heart was like mine, you'd be here. You'd be here. Here is not Han Shan's place. Don't seek to make it your place either. We get plenty of teachings that tell us to forget the self. You know, you already are here. But your heart isn't here. Your mind isn't here. We need to Well, recognize this to wake up to this. If your heart was like mine, he says, you'd be here. We're talking about something immediate. We're not talking about something far away or something that really takes us years and years and years to find or achieve. Yeah, it does take years and years and years because we keep searching like that. We keep looking. We keep reaching for something else. If we would finally wake up to what we're doing in an instant, we'd realize we're right here. So Han Chan says, all I can say to those I meet is, try and make it to Cold Mountain. So he doesn't tell us the way. Because there isn't any way, there's no trail. But if your heart were like mine, you'd be here. Try and make it to Cold Mountain. Try. Just try. Try and make it. Make it the Cold Mountain. It's a matter of just looking right here. Try that. Stop reaching for something else. Stop looking out there. Stop trying to get something from Cold Mountain or from someone else. You know, all these things are out there. They take care of themselves anyway. Let them. You take care of this right here. Attending to what it is that you're doing. And if you'll notice, I hope, maybe I've helped you to see the but I'll remind you again now. But this isn't about you taking something up and having to do something special. It is about noticing what you're doing now. In this moment. So people ask the way to Cold Mountain. We do that because we haven't looked right here. And if you've never met someone like this, Cold Mountain, if you haven't met someone like this, it's because you yourself have not allowed yourself to meet such a one as this. Nobody's blocking you from this. You have to see this yourself. You have to do this yourself. If you want to meet Han Chan, how do I find my way to Cold Mountain? How do I meet Han Chan? Says he meets people. All I could say to those I meet, try and make it to Cold Mountain. But have you met Han Chan? Have you met anyone like this? The opportunity is always right here, and you're here. You are here. You are always here. We keep forgetting about that, and we keep looking out there to someone else, to something else. And so we never meet someone like this. But if your heart and mind were right here, you would meet this person right here, right where you're sitting now. But we never allow ourselves to do that. So if you have not met Han Chan, Cold Mountain, you have not met the awakened, this is your doing. You need to reflect on, you need to notice what it is that you are doing. You need to notice your own heart and mind. And this way, we can meet with Han Chan. We meet with the awakened. As Dogen put it, your treasure store opens up of its own. And you can use it at will, he says. Sometimes we're troubled by it. What do you mean, at will? Will, we've been taught, you know, it's a problem with will. But this treasure store that we have, that we can awaken to and use it at will, this intent, this desire is just simply to live out of awakeness. And realizing that everything is coming up to us. We don't need to go after that. It is all right here. Cold Mountain is right here. on China's right here. But if we have to ask, how do I find the way? Yeah, it's our usual understanding. How do I find the way to Cold Mountain? It means we still haven't even heard that there's no trail. Well, I'll let you reflect on that a bit. Oh, relatively short talk. Maybe I should drivel on a little bit. But maybe you have a question?
Steve?
Yes?
Why the characterization of cold and icy and foggy?
Yeah, I was going to say something about that. That's why my talk ended up being so short, I guess. Well, I guess I did say a little bit that our life, very easily, we become agitated. A lot of movement there, a lot of energy. You know, and this is kind of heat and warmth and kind of associated maybe with something like that. Whereas what Han Shan is referring to here, Cold Mountain, is very settled, very quiet, very still. Even in summer. Of course, we can experience summer where it's warm, you know, nice. But our heart will go out to, yeah, that's what I want, that warmth, I want the niceness, I want that. And we forget all about this settledness of mine. You know, it isn't like the cold is preferable to the heat and this sort of thing. But we are talking about that, you know, just this settledness of mind. The desire is just simply, the desire of one who's awake is just simply to be awake. And so in this next moment, as I forget that and slip into some agitation, into some excitement here where things are warming up and heating up, as quickly as possible, I want to recall, to realize what I'm doing now and to just come back to this. So where it's settled and quiet. Normally, unless we reflect on this a little bit, you know, we're looking for the excitement. We now are unfortunate enough, or fortunate, it's not necessarily one or the other, but to live in this age where there's just so much entertainment, you know, so many distractions. People in Han Shan's time didn't have quite, you know, I'm sure there were plenty of distractions even then, but not at all like what we have today. With the television and the internet and travel. Just so much. So it's difficult for us, more than in Han Shan's time, even to find a quiet moment. Or to reflect on the fact that, you know, this is something I'm going to have to do to find some moment like this that is more settled, to bring myself back to that once in a while. This is our practice. Calm down, sit down, and to be aware of what's taking place here. And to be aware particularly of the mind. Is it agitated? Is it busy? No, it's because we've been out in this agitated, busy, heated up world. And if we don't reflect on that, there we are. And we find one more thing there. Oh yeah, enlightenment. I want to go after it. And it's all up in this very heated up place. So, at some point, and it isn't like the cold is the good place and the right place and to be there. You know, no, but you need to find this once in a while to realize that there is such a place as this. Well, the mind is settled and ripened and mature. Once we realize this, then we can come back to this place. Or even in summer, we can find this place. Even in the heated up world, we can find this place. But it's all a matter of just realizing it right here. There's no trail to this place. Nothing special you need to do in a moment, you can find it because it's right here, it's always here. But our heart and our mind, most of the time are not here. They're out chasing about. So this place, it has this cold spot. You know, it's very much even just like, any kind of engine or something like this. It has to have what's called a cold sink. Even the earth has a cold sink. Well, we have two. There's one at either pole. It's called a cold sink. And then all of the weather, all of the energy, everything that's going on the earth, the oceans and how they turn and rotate and the currents and everything that's all the dynamic fluids of the earth, the atmosphere and the oceans, all move in the ways that they do and help life, you know, foster life, all of this, all because of, you know, we have these cold sinks. If we didn't have these cold spots, life would perish on this planet. So even in the physical world, just that image alone, this is required. But we want to avoid the cold places. We want to destroy. And now they're even, as we're warming up this planet because of our behaviors and things like this, we're even denying that this is even a problem. And the places that are warming up the fastest are at the poles. This is where the environmental stuff is really, it's changing rapidly. We're down here in the more temperate and tropical areas where we don't even quite notice that so much. And of course there's a big campaign to help us to ignore all of this. We have no idea. I mean, I'm talking about just the physical planet here, which is very much related to, it's not just an analogy to what I've been talking about here with Cold Mountain. But we have no idea the kind of peril that we are facing with this, with climate change. People are still very ignorant of this. We don't realize that in a very real way we are talking about extinction of our species. People don't quite realize it. We're flirting with it. I'm not saying that we are going to become extinct, but we could, and we don't seem to understand that. We really don't understand this. That's how serious this kind of stuff is. Well, now we're getting back to just the ecology of your mind. Same sort of thing is going on here. And if you never allow for there to be a cold sink, so to speak, this place of settledness and quietness, you know, the mind will continue to rage in agitation in such a way that you can't even find or even think that there's something, you know, that your heart sings for this place that is settled and quiet and still. We have to be entertained. We have to be pleased. We have to... And of course, we even want that thing. Because enlightenment, yeah, that sounds so good and so inviting, at least for some of us, and then we go looking for that. But we don't understand what's required here. So we have to find this place. That place is there. This settled spot. But usually we live with such agitation, we just ignore that. Even when we think our heart and our mind is that we want to find our way to Cold Mountain, but we still keep thinking of it in those terms. Then I have to go somewhere and do something rather than to just stop and to realize where you are. So this is what I think what that image is kind of helping us with. It's pointing to that. So I don't know, does that answer? Okay. Anything else? And that same kind of peril, as I said, this isn't just simply an analogy I was drawing between the mind and the planet. But that same kind of peril, just for you internally, within your own heart and mind, right here, is there, you're living with it. And just as we are oblivious to the peril that's going on now with the way that we're handling the environment at large. You're living with this now without really understanding and realizing the kind of peril that you're in. Without ever allowing yourself to settle. And how that is absolutely required to finally wake up to the actual reality of the world. You know, that part cannot be omitted from your understanding. And that understanding I'm speaking of is not having ideas about it, but living it. Anything else?
I didn't understand what you just said.
Oh.
You said something about you're in peril.
Yeah, within. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what I was saying is that just as the environment, you know, with global warming, we are in peril and we don't realize it.
Right.
Okay, like that, our own mind, if we are just living constantly out of an agitated mind, we are also in peril and we don't know it. Well, let's put it this way. Suzuki Roshi, right at the opening of Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, where he says that people think that Zen is difficult, but we think it's difficult because it's difficult to wake up. He's talking about the same thing here now. And then he points out, he said, but it's not difficult to become enlightened. But we think it is. But he says what is difficult is to make your mind pure. He's using that term now. To make the mind settled, quiet, pure. And this is what we find difficult. It is so difficult for us that it takes us, even after we start to study and practice this, usually for years before we even really begin to understand that this is what we need to be paying attention to and to come back to this. And what I'm saying in the peril is that to the extent that we're caught up here, we don't even have a clue. And even after this stuff has been pointed out to us over and over again, and we've practiced it over and over again, and, you know, without really fully understanding, but hearing it said and pointed out, it takes us a long time to understand that. But the enlightenment itself is really nothing at all. In fact, it is right here for you now in this very moment. Yeah.
You know, I don't think he lived at Cold Mountain every single time for every single day. I mean, he did get tossed away too. And, you know, I mean.
How do you know? Do you know him?
I don't know him, but I mean,
But that doesn't matter. Yeah. Don't confuse Han Chan with a person.
Okay. I don't know what you mean.
Well, if we're talking about an enlightened person, and then we think, oh, Han Chan. So we'll think like this. So we're talking about this person here. Well, we will, to talk, to tell a story, to point out some things. Yeah, so we have Han Chan. And then we think, well, there's this guy who lived, his name was Han Chan, and he was enlightened. And so moment by moment, he was on the beam. Yeah. Yeah. But there isn't any person. There's no enlightened one. There's no Han Chan. You know, there's no Catherine. There's no Steve.
Well, there is, but there isn't.
Well, there appears to be. There appears to be a Catherine. And here now, Steve, is talking to Catherine. Catherine's talking. What? What is Steve? What is Catherine? What is Han Chan?
Well, I know. We can't throw that away.
No, who's throwing it away?
I don't know.
As we talk, we're using this. We're, you know, nothing's being thrown away here. But what I'm saying is that the mistake that we'll make is that we think that there's some particular person here, persisting person from moment to moment that we're speaking of here. Yeah. And to the extent that we see things like this, that we truly believe that this is reality, that this is how things are. To that extent, you know, we're not seeing. Put it this way, that when I'm speaking of this cold mountain, the settling of the mind, that cannot settle out fully to the extent that we still think that there are beings persisting.
Right, so there is no way to get to a place where you're not going to be not at peace at some time.
No, you can't do that. I can't do that. Han Shan can't do that. But that's not what we're talking about. There isn't any peace or enlightenment for you or for me. But when you are forgotten, and I am forgotten, it is here. If I am formed again, here's this hot place. It's a lot of agitation. Now I have concern. And if this is all I ever know and think about and measure everything according to that, then I'm oblivious to the fact that there is this settledness. That's quite, that is sitting with me all the while. No. The peril's not that we're going to die. There's no one there to die. That's not the peril. The peril is just simply to not awaken.
Would it be accurate to say as long as we're seeking peace, then we're identifying ourselves as something separate and seeking?
Yeah.
Is that the same?
Yeah. I've given a talk here a couple of occasions, I guess, with the theme, Buddhas do not seek. That's a teaching we have, isn't it? An expression that we have. And that's what this is referring to. We need to understand this. To the extent that we're seeking and reaching and trying to figure out and getting there, and I'm going to practice hard so I can get to this point. All of this is to not understand this simple teaching that, well, the awakened do not seek. Han Shan said, if your heart was like mine, you'd be here. Now, of course, this is, once again, making it sound like Han Shan is somebody particular. Yeah, and that's just a way to tell the story. But beyond that, there's really no one in particular who's Han Shan. That's why to be here, there's just here. And it's not Han Shan's here. But if your heart was like mine, he says, you'd be here. You'd be here, because it's just here. Oh, certainly.
You know, when you say Buddhas do not seek, Buddhas, who are Buddhas, there are someone having an awakening, a moment.
We're not talking about somebody.
I know, I'm using short.
But a Buddha is not seeking. Buddha not seeking, same thing.
Okay, well, that's putting it differently.
Well, there's many different ways to put it, I suppose. Bev, did you have something?
Say, awakening that's in peril, or being peril.
Yeah,
in
peril. Right.
Not any particular person in peril.
Yes.
It's just practices in
peril. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's just it. So that's why I was saying that this is about awakening, and this is the problem that we have. Yes?
If the Buddha does not seek, then what is it that seeks to save all sentient beings?
I have no idea. To save all sentient beings is immediate. But if there are sentient beings out there, well, there they are, and all you guys, and the whole world beyond you, and now I got to get out there and save these, you know. And you can take the same perspective. Yeah, for each of us, I got to get out. Yeah, of course, this is just our ordinary understanding. You know, and you'll never succeed. You're not going to save. Really, even in the end, Buddhas don't save any. That's why we have, like in the Diamond Sutra, where we have the Bodhisattva who has dedicated their whole life, everything, to the saving of all sentient beings. They make this vow to save all sentient beings. They'll lead all beings to nirvana before they themselves enter nirvana. And then after all beings have been led to nirvana, has anyone been led to nirvana? No, because there were no beings to be saved. So what is that all about? Well, I'll just say this much right now, is that this certainly ought to be enough to realize that this breaks us out of our normal way of looking at things. In our confusion, in our deluded understanding of things, we see solid things and beings and peoples and items and thoughts and ideas and all as perpetuating things. And with that understanding of things, we seek. We will now seek, thinking that somewhere in all of this, there's the answer. It's, you know, maybe there's many, or maybe it's spread out, it's here and there, but I'm going to seek until I find that. But to the awakened, they're right here. They see that there aren't any things formed here. And so they do not seek. There is no being there to be saved. And yet at the same time, the Buddhas as well as the Bodhisattvas, well, the Buddhas actually, in the end, we say that the Buddhas are even silent. But the Bodhisattva, who aspires to be awake, they go out and teach and point out things. The Buddhas do too. Even though we say the Buddhas are silent, what that's really referring to is a number of different ways of looking at this, but like, for example, our Buddha here, this stone, silent. Have you ever heard it say anything? And yet if you settle down and you arrive at that cold place, that settled place, you can hear the stone teaching. The stone is offering teaching. Every plank in the floor. Look at your fingernail, any one of them, it's teaching. So the Buddhas are silent in that way. In other words, this reality is teaching. It's showing, it's always showing itself to us. And there's nothing mysterious even about it. But when we go seeking and reaching for this and that and imagining that there are these hard, solid things out there, separated out one from another, being and persisting through time, we do not hear this. You know, and we go seeking. Our heart is caught up in seeking. But this kind of teaching that I've been kind of pointing to today, and as frustrating as it might be, Catherine, people, you can't just come in off the street and hear it and, oh, I got it. It's possible, I suppose. We do have the story of Huineng, who, in hearing one passage out of the Diamond Sutra, woke up. But he also woke up with enough sense to realize he needed to go seek a teacher. But he did wake up. So this is possible. But odds are, you're going to need to settle with this and come back to it.
So we can't say woken up. That's the thing. It's that we woken up. We want to...
Yeah.
Wake up and keep it.
Because and that's a deluded thought. So immediately we're right back to that again. Because anytime there's persistence in the picture here, and we think this, we're thinking in these terms, this is delusion. There's nothing persisting. So there's no one we can point to who is awake. Even Hanshan. Hanshan is just an idea that we have, but it's a way of telling a story. Of course, we consider, was there really such a guy like that who lived? Yeah, probably, actually, but who knows, really, in the end. And does it matter? We have this story. And the story helps to point. But we shouldn't hang on to any bit of it too tightly. Okay, was there anything else? Any other question? Yes, Jed.
Do you think we're concerned with identifying holding problems? It seems like we're maybe looking kind of like something. You know, again, the delusion, we're kind of not sense of that, but we're trying to identify something different.
Yeah, well, again, as I pointed out, and you probably already have forgotten about it, but I've pointed this out probably hundreds of times, but just don't keep looking out there. Reflect on right here what you're doing. So this is what we need to do, and this is what we never do. And even after I pointed out and pointed out and pointed out, and we talk a little bit, and the next thing, you know, we're doing this again. Reaching out there for something. We're figuring out something, reaching for that. And a certain amount of that is fine. I mean, when I sit down and give a talk, that's kind of what's going on, kind of, sort of. But at some point, you need to just sit down and be quiet. And reflect on some things that have been pointed out. And whether or not other people are interpreting things in a particular way or whatever, but this isn't your business. And in the end, it's not even really my business. Though when I sit down here like this and then talk to you, it's my, what can I say, my duty to do my best to find a way to help you to notice what it is you need to be paying attention to. And do this over and over and over again. But in the end, whether any of you awaken to your own heart and mind right here now in this moment, it's not, in the end, that's not my business. That's not even really my response, because I can't make you enlightened.
I meant this more in general, not necessarily, you know, a particular group or anything, but is it perhaps a tendency to, you know, to try to identify?
Yeah, our tendency is to grasp.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's what I was saying. We, you know, there we are. We're out there. And what I'm saying is that recognize when you're doing that and realize that you can do that for kelpa upon kelpa. And you're going to just continue to do that. That's all, period. If you want to wake up, there's something else you need to do. And what you've been doing is hard. And in fact, it's impossible in the end. And it's very hard and it wastes an awful lot of energy and time and all of this. And yet there's something very simple and immediate that you can do now, at any moment. It's forever in this moment, and in this moment again and again and again, we can awaken, awaken, awaken. But this, for whatever reason, when Suzuki Roshi said it's very difficult for us to make our mind pure. It's very simple. But what's difficult is for us to realize, first of all, even to realize what that is, let alone to realize that this is what we need to be doing, and, or put it this way, to realize what it is that we're doing instead, which is always reaching out there and trying to put things together. And it isn't even like all the stuff that we do out there is bad or wrong, and it's just that what we need to understand is that, because a lot of that is necessary. Okay, we're human beings, we need to function out there in the world now, and there's nothing wrong with this, except most of the time, this is so wrapped up in a lot of confusion that it isn't particularly helpful. And for us to wake up to that and to realize that, we need to do this other thing that we constantly ignore and find it even difficult to bring ourselves to a point where we realize there's something that needs to be done here that is so quiet and so still. And seemingly so small, just this little point right here, which is really the whole world. But we don't return to this spot. You know, and basically because we just don't know any better. We're ignorant of that. And so, and my job is to somehow to try to find some way to help you notice this. And even if I can get you to notice it, you might notice it for a moment and then you'll be lost again. So we have to... Because that's just kind of how it is. There's so much here to distract us. It's very difficult for us to come back to just this. And it isn't even a matter that we get on the beam and just stay there. It would be like what I was saying, like we might imagine Han Shan as just somebody like that, but I don't know anybody like that. I'm certainly not like that. So I'm not telling you, you know, be like me or something like that. You know, I don't know anybody who can do that. That's not the point. Point is just even see if you just do that once and then realize where you are. Then you can do it again and again. But to do that perfectly and to never veer off, No, don't even think in those terms. Just see if you can do this.
You know. So that's not what he's talking about. He says the difficulty of mind pure is not that thing on the quiet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. That's what we find difficult. Yeah.
Yeah. If we're carrying the prayer of difficulty in our practice, if we make that a goal and we're trying to do that, we're reaching to have a heart and mind like Ranjana, we're reaching to achieve that, then we're turning that into something else.
Exactly. I mean, again, this is very subtle. What needs to be done is very subtle, because that's what we'll do. So we think, okay, now I see, now so Han Shan, and maybe you can take what I've said now today, and yeah, that's what I'm gonna, you know, and we still haven't reflected on what we're doing, you know. And again, it's not even like taking things up in that way is wrong or bad. That's not the way to look at any of this. It's just to recognize what that is. And recognize that the awakened do not seek. In this moment, if someone is awakened, they are not seeking. That's what that means. It doesn't mean there's somebody in particular who's a Buddha and who's enlightened and persists through time as a Buddha, and they don't do that. No, it just means in this very moment, if there is understanding and awakening, there's no seeking. And just realize that when you are engaged in some way other than that, then that's the ordinary mind is operating there. This is all. And as Suzuki Roshi said, this is what we find is difficult. It is so difficult that it takes us a long time even to understand the assignment. Yes?
When you say to come here to your heart and mind, did you say that you come here, or that you see that you are here?
You forget the self. All there is here. And there never was, you know, someplace else. And this isn't, again, this isn't just metaphor. Literally, you know, like even in physics, if any of you know about Bell's theorem, for example, what this has shown is that there's only here. There appears to be, it's called a theorem of non-locality. It's just, there's just here. Seemingly things on the other end of the universe are intimately related to right here. So there doesn't seem to be a there. But it's the same kind of thing. So what I'm saying, all there is here. Right, exactly. That's what awakening is seeing that, realizing that, and in that moment, living out of that. But of course, in the very next moment, we're carrying on as if there actually is a there. But ultimately, there's just here. We can't ignore there, because there appears to be a there. But it's really just here. But I don't know. Forget all that. But I just find it interesting that even physicists, people who've been looking at the physical world in detail, kind of arrive at the same understanding. And of course, nobody understands that. If you don't understand that, don't worry, physicists don't understand it either. Sort of like, wow, look, this is strange. In fact, back in the early 70s when they were starting to realize that, this seems to... Bell figured this out in 1964, I think it was 63, somewhere in there. And then when they actually started running experiments to do this, people really started getting spooked. But now we're beyond being spooked and we just kind of go on. Interesting fact they uncovered here, but what are we going to do about it? Let's just go on. And then we go on. But this is, again, this is kind of a metaphor for what we do with our minds. And in terms of awakening, we can wake up to this and realize this, and we think, well, let me just go on. Let me get back to the real world, see? And where there's a here and a there, you know. But if you don't reflect back on the fact that there's just here, and of course, even if we say here, there's really no word for this. Because if there isn't a there, how can there even be a here? You know. Our conceptualizing mind will try to get hold of this, and you know, this is what we'll do. And then we'll create things out of this, and then we entertain ourselves with all of this and get spooked or whatever else. But what we really need to wake up to is that reality, you can't grasp it. So in the end, we can't even say anything. This is why the Buddhas are silent. But through that silence, they continuously teach. Show us everything. And it's all there for us to see. But we'll sit there and we'll pick up little aspects of it and then jabber to ourselves about it. You know? But anyway, we have gone over the hour, so I better end it. So I hope I answered your question there. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. To hear more talks on Buddhism, Zen, and related topics, visit dharmafield.org.